City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Mitchell Fain.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
You're listening to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 327. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Mitchell Fain.
All the way from Louisville, Kentucky.
Louisville, Kentucky.
You learned how to say Louisville, I hear.
I'm trying my best. I'm trying my best. People keep teaching me.
How are you doing being a Yankee in Kentucky?
I'm loving it. I have to say, this is a very, very friendly city. I mean, people have been so unbelievably kind to us here, the cast. And our audiences, Amy, have been crazy. I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm bragging, but we are like a major hit here.
Yeah.
We've gotten a standing ovation every single performance.
Wow.
I mean, including previews.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people are waiting in the lobby to meet us and asking if they can come and say hi, and they've come back two or three times. It's like insane. It's really a joy.
It's well-deserved because it's such a phenomenal, phenomenal show. And,
yeah, great show. If anyone's in the Louisville, Kentucky area, come see Looking Glass Alice at the Actors Theater of Louisville. We run till next Sunday, Sunday the 20th. It's
so
great.
You're soon to be home.
I am soon to be home. I feel like I was home for a blip after the ship. Like just a total blip, started rehearsals, and then I'm here.
Yeah.
And I'm having a blast, but I definitely want to come home.
Yeah. Well, we want you to come home. I want you to come home. So
it's funny because we're usually on the couch doing this.
I know.
And I am on a couch, but I'm not on our couch. I'm on a separate couch. And since there's no one else here, I'm not wearing anything.
It's scandalous. A naked queer cast.
Anybody who knows me knows that I'm a totally naked person. I'm not an exhibitionist. Like, I don't care if anybody looks. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
But I am not a person who wears clothes often. So
yep.
I am completely naked talking to you on the couch.
I'm so turned on right now. So turned on. Hey, you know, just so much has happened in the past couple of days that I've been so excited to talk to you about. The big Video Music Awards, where our good friend Lady Gaga won Best New Artist.
She was fabulous. She's so bizarre.
She thanked the fans and God and the gays. How can we not love her?
I know, exactly. Those, I saw somebody write a really funny Facebook status where they said, Lady Gaga, you promised to change my life. It was good, but you didn't change my life. I thought it was funny. But I thought it was pretty great. I think she's just fascinating and funny. And here's another thing. She actually can sing.
Yeah, she could actually sing, write, and play instruments.
Right.
And and she's not a bad dancer, you know. It's bizarre.
No,
it's kind of a performance art dancing, but she's kind of, I mean, I thought Beyonce's like 45 women doing Single Ladies was just exciting. I would have loved to have been in that room.
Well, you know what? I have to say, you know, I've gone back and forth on Beyonce for a long time, but I just, there's something about her I just love. She's beautiful. She's talented. She's an event when she performs. Mm-hmm. She gives 150,000%. I don't know. I'm off the fence about her. I just love her unabashedly.
What I love about her is she's not precious. There is nothing precious when she is dancing that Sasha Fierce single ladies dance. It is kind of like, I mean, there is something almost ugly and butch about it and otherworldly, and I don't know, almost, at the same time, sexy.
I like it
so bizarre.
Tina Turner. I think it has the Tina Turner quality. You know, like Tina was never afraid of getting a little rough and dirty.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Beyonce's, I think she's fabulous. I really do. I thought she was great. And then Madonna.
Madonna, who actually, you know, looked pretty good. I thought, how much airbrushing and lighting and how much plaster does she have on her face? Because last
Holy
time we had seen
crap.
Her, she had the chicken arms, which scared the shit out of me. But,
she looks bizarre. I mean, don't get me wrong, she's got a killer body for a 14-year-old boy, but she looked pretty fabulous.
She did. She was covered up, and that was good. But I thought her opening speech about Michael Jackson was one of the best. This is such a weird thing to say, but I thought that moment was one of the best moments of her career.
It was classy.
It was well written. It was classy. It had heart.
Yep.
It was reverent. It was appropriate.
And she knew him, so it was personal. I liked that. What she said was, "Thank you for letting me have my opportunity to say my piece." Like she hadn't had a chance to like say her sort of thing about it. And it seemed very personal and not. She can strike me as very pretentious, and she mm-hmm. came across as very sincere, I think. Speaking of classy, I want to go back to Beyonce. Mm-hmm. You know, with that whole thing with Kanye West,
mm-hmm.
Taylor Swift.
Mm-hmm.
The classy thing was that when Beyonce won for Best Video of the Year,
mm-hmm. at the end.
And at the end, and she called Taylor Swift back on.
Mm-hmm.
And Taylor Swift her moment. I thought, that's classy.
Yeah.
That's classy and not necessary and unplanned. And I thought that was a class move.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I just thought with Madonna beginning it in that way and Beyonce ending it in the way of saying, you know, when I was 17 and with Destiny's Child, I won my first VMA and I got to have my moment. And it was one of the most exciting moments of my life. And so, Taylor, you know, I want you to have your moment to this 18-year-old girl, you know.
Who's a lovely girl.
Who's a lovely girl and a talented girl.
Didn't deserve to be thrust into some sort of weird, controversial moment because she's just a little girl doing what she does and people like it.
Yeah.
She's not a controversial person. She's not trying to steal something from Beyonce. She's not, you know, she's not involved in some sort of like weird like celeb feud or something. She's just a little girl.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Kanye, come on, that's a whole different sideline that I'm not even going to give him airplay.
What do you think? Do you think it was planned? I mean, a lot of people are sort of theorizing that it was just a deliberate sort of like thing to do to get his name in the paper.
I don't know anymore with him. You know, sometimes I want to like him, and then he does something like that, and I just can't stand him. You know,
I'm so hot and cold
about him.
Pink was on some morning talk show this morning, like, I think Today's Show, if I'm not mistaken, she called him a tool.
Good for her.
And it was funny.
Well, because he totally had egg all over his face because Beyonce got the biggest award of the night just because she didn't get the first award. You know, it was.
Yeah,
he just had egg all over his face.
It was ridiculous.
But I loved that they let Madonna not only have her say about Michael Jackson because, I mean, well, all artists could have their say about Michael Jackson, but I just, you know, they are. I remember back years ago when they had the Michael Jackson Vanguard Award, there was like buzz that Madonna was really upset that it was being named after Michael Jackson. This is when he was still alive, you know. And what I felt was really interesting last night was, you know, there are all these parallels in their lives. You know, they were born in the same month. You know, they both are, are of eight sibling families.
And a wildly influential, like a beyond just hit singles.
Yeah.
They're wildly
iconic.
Influential,
I mean, of our,
culturally.
Of many generations. I mean, you know, they are the iconic figures.
Yep.
And I loved her little story of going to the movie with, or watching the movie in her house with him and dinner. And I don't know. I really enjoyed that. I thought that was really a nice moment. I wish Janet had gotten to do more, but.
I know, me too.
I was left wanting. Now I'm left wanting again because I have only, as we're recording this podcast, Monday night, I have only gotten to see one half of the Whitney Houston interview with Oprah.
I watched it too. It was fabulous. Hey, by the way,
yeah,
I'm just saying, I bought her CD on iTunes the day it came out.
Yep.
I love it.
Do you? I haven't heard it yet.
I was nervous about it, and I bought it because I wanted just to support, because I've had this whole thing about fuck Britney Spears, and why are people interested in her comeback? She's a talentless tart with her eyes are too far apart, and she looks like a hammerhead shark.
What do you think, really, Mitchell?
I can't stand her, and it bothered me that people are so into her comeback. It's like, don't you have to have talent to come back? So I was sort of nervous about Whitney's album, so I wanted to support, so I bought it the day it came out, and I think it's delightful.
Well, I'm going to have to download it right after we get done.
I really, really like it. I mean, the single, The Million Dollar Bill, that Alicia Keys wrote for her, mm-hmm. I can't stop listening to it. Every day on my walk to the theater, I put in my iPod, and I just jam as I'm walking to the theater to get excited.
Well, I remember getting the Whitney Houston album.
Remember?
Crazy. The orange one with her with the flower behind the ear and the
white dress. I know what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. Many of you listening may not. Many of you may. But I remember getting my first Whitney Houston album. And I saw Whitney Houston perform live in Memphis, Tennessee with my brother, who couldn't have been a bigger. It's very funny that, you know, talking about Michael Jackson with Steven Rader, I had to talk about my brother. But talking about Whitney Houston, I have to talk about my brother as well. One would think my brother was African-American the way he coveted African-American singers. You know, we just always.
Well, I'm the same way. You know, I'm like it's funny. I'm working with two African-Americans in my cast and they're friggin' amazing. But Kevin and Nadeo, yeah, they're just amazing. But as is my whole cast. But, you know, when we're all in the same apartment building together, we all have our own apartments, mm-hmm. and if you're on the same wireless network, you can look at each other's iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
And most of my iTunes is like the history of black music in America.
Right.
And like, I could teach a class. And so like, even these guys are like, who the hell's that? I'm like, you don't know who that is? She's like one of the seminal singers of all time. And that's why I have to do a little educating.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it was just the music that was playing in my house. You know, Diana Ross, Dionne Warwick, Jackson 5, Michael Jackson.
Didn't you think that, speaking of Dionne Warwick, I thought that Whitney Houston really looks like Dionne Warwick now. Like, she's sort of grown into looking
she
like
She sounds Dionne like her speaking. That's why I'm so interested to hear her sing, because her voice has become so raspy.
All right, I want to put a stop to this. I've been waiting for this opportunity to say this. Being the sort of crazy obsessed African American soul singer expert here. I want to tell you something about what people are saying about Whitney's voice. Yes, she did a lot of drugs. Yes, she smoked a lot of cigarettes, so she's done some damage to her voice. But if you listen to her mother,
mm-hmm.
Sissy, if you listen to her cousin Dion sing, they all started with Whitney's range.
Oh, interesting.
All started with that range. Dionne Warwick, when you listen to her early music, mm-hmm. she could wail. I mean, you can hear Whitney in her voice.
Mm-hmm.
And then, at a certain age, like 40, both of their voices dropped.
Mm.
And not because of drugs or hard living, but because in their family genetics, that's what happens to mm-hmm. their voice. And then you listen to Dionne Warwick in the 80s, and it's a different voice, but an amazing voice.
Mm-hmm.
So I think people need to back off Whitney not sounding like she's 19 and let her have the voice that she has.
Hey, Joni Mitchell, come on, you know?
Joni Mitchell.
I mean, like, amazing.
Let's give Whitney a chance to sing like this.
Yeah.
Like literally, I want someone to go home and put on Don't Make Me Over, which is Dionne Warwick's first hit,
mm-hmm.
and then put on I Know I'll Never Love This Way Again from the 80s. Right?
Yeah.
And listen to how it's still a great voice, but it's a very different voice, and it's what happens to there. Or listen to her mother when she was with the Sweet Inspirations, and then listen to her mother singing that duet that she did with Whitney from Chess,
mm.
and compare what happens genetically to their voice,
mm-hmm.
and then stop talking about Whitney ruining her voice. She just has a different voice.
Mm-hmm.
That's my stance.
Okay. All right. I hear you. I wasn't saying that she had ruined her voice. I just...
No, but I
haven't heard her sing yet, so...
You just hear it all the time. And matter of fact, tomorrow, on the second half of the Oprah interview, she's going to sing.
Oh, yeah. I know. I'm so excited.
So excited.
I will have already downloaded the CD tonight, so I will know.
You're going to love it. You know,
what do you think? Is Oprah hitting hard enough? How do you think Whitney is coming off so far? Obviously, we've talked a bit about Bobby Brown. She's definitely talked about drugs and
she avoided the question about whether or not he abused her. She said that he was physically abusive, but then she also made reference to her family being like, "Okay, we warned you once." And mm-hmm. what does that mean? Mm-hmm. So she sort of avoided that question, which mm-hmm. I understand. That's a very personal question, and a very painful question. But I think Oprah's doing a good job. I think she's being respectful. I have to say Whitney seems very lucid and not crazy.
Yeah.
I watched, speaking of like huge fans, my friend Megan was here visiting me to see the show, and she's like your brother's like Whitney Houston's number one fan. Like she's, mm-hmm. Grew up. She's young. She's like 25. So she grew up obsessed with Whitney, you know? And, so to watch it with like a Whitney fanatic was really fun, actually.
Yeah.
You know, cause she's like seen everything Whitney's ever done, every interview she's ever given. In fact, she can do the Diane Sawyer, the famous Diane Sawyer interview.
Mm-hmm.
Megan can literally do it by heart. It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. Brilliant.
Well, I am. I think that, there have been many moments where Oprah has been very moved or, the spitting in the face thing, Oprah seemed to be very moved by that. And, it is interesting because in hearing the interview, you kind of do see that Bobby Brown was her obsession.
Yeah.
And that, I'm sure she got addicted to cocaine because if you do it long enough, you'll get addicted to cocaine. You really won't get addicted to marijuana. You just might get addicted to the feeling of, smoking marijuana. But it's not the same kind of addictive drug. But
It's cocaine or heroin or something, right?
Right. And, but interesting that, how much she really wanted to. I can really relate. I can really relate with wanting not to fail.
Yep. Wanting not to fail and also wanting to make this thing work. I think she comes from a family where you try to make those things work. And I thought she came across very lucid. I think she came across honest. I feel like Oprah's treating her with respect. I like if she would say something and then Oprah would very sincerely say, "All right, I get that. I get that. I get what you're saying." I mean, she may not agree with it, but I get it. I sort of appreciated that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see part two and to hear her sing and then just to see where this goes. I do know that her album, the first week out was number one.
Yeah. Do me a favor, when you get the album, put it in your car, right? Put it on your playlist or your iTunes. Get in your car tomorrow when you have to run errands.
Mm-hmm.
Roll down the windows and put on Million Dollar Bill as loud as you can stand it. Because that's the kind of song it is.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? It's like tooling around, warm breeze blowing in your face, and just a happy, happy old school Whitney jam on your iTunes. It's so good.
Well, and I love how she just kept saying, she had so much money, and you just forget like how much money she must have. Like even doing all the drugs she did, it can't even start to take a dip into how much money she has.
Yeah, she's a rich girl.
She's a rich lady. Rich Atlanta lady. She should be one of the Desperate Housewives of Atlanta.
I know. Now, of course, on a much sadder note, Amy.
Yeah.
We lost Patrick Swayze today.
It's just so sad. It seems inevitable that we would be announcing this sometime, but you had the opportunity to work with him this past year.
I did. I mean, we worked together very briefly. It was, two nights on the set of The Beast, and my impressions of him, which I've said, I think I probably said it when it first happened, when we did a podcast after I worked with him, it has not changed, that he was incredibly kind, very gracious, knew that he was the papa of the set, right? It was his show, and he was the face of it. And so here I am, I'm a small character. I have two episodes. I die in the second one. I'm not there very long. I don't really matter in the grand scheme of it. And yet he took time to come over, introduce himself, thank me for being there. And I just found him to be an incredibly gracious man. And everybody on the set that I talked to, the makeup ladies, the sound people, the stunt guys, all the people that I worked with behind the scenes, all said the same thing, that he just couldn't have been a harder working, more polite, kind gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that says a lot about him and why, he never had, he had a very brief time as an A-list celebrity, like as a major movie star. But there's a, I think there's a reason why the, people's affection for him never faded.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's that. I think that there was this sense, even if you never met him, that he was a gracious and kind man.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it came across.
Yeah, and I think, too, like, the movies that he made, you know, you could have, I mean, I can even think of, like, some extraordinary major actors that we would say, wow, he was just, like, a really great actor. But it was the kind of characters that he played that really just got deep inside people, I think, their hearts.
I think so, too.
And he really was able to tap and affect people there, whether it be Ghost or whether it be Dirty Dancing or...
My personal favorite is Point Break.
Yeah.
I have to say Point Break. I could actually write a paper about the sort of existentialism in Point Break.
Yeah.
Point Break, I think it's kind of brilliant. And then the guilty pleasure that is Roadhouse. But just Ghost, Ghost, which is not a movie that I loved, but Ghost, which he's wonderful in, and Dirty Dancing, which I truly love. I mean, very few of us performers, actors, even stars, get to be in films that aren't just... successful films, they're phenomena.
Mm-hmm. You know?
And he was lucky enough to be in two films that were cultural phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
I think about something bigger than just a film.
I think about his wife, you know, they were married for so many decades and to be
lovely.
Young, to be, you know, he was 57 when he died today, which is so young.
Yeah,
I just
young.
Think about her, you know, my heart really goes out to her because, you know, she's lived so much of her life with him.
I know, they built a life together, a really happy life together. I know that interview that he did, I guess it was with Barbara Walters or Diane Sawyer earlier last year, and they were interviewed together, and, you know, these are two people who seemed very, very in love. It's very sad. It's very sad, but it's nice if you go on Facebook right now. Well, you're not on Facebook, but if you went on Facebook... you see, I think like the first 10 posts that I was flicking through to see what people had to say were all about Patrick Swayze.
Yeah.
What a beautiful testament that, you know, people are taking time to sort of write something lovely about him.
Yeah.
You know,
I think it's true.
Lovely. I think it's lovely. And I think he's no longer in pain.
Yeah. Rest in peace. Rest in peace. Patrick Swayze dead at 57 today. Monday, September 14th. We are going to be back. Mitchell, I'm finally going to tell you a little bit about my trip to Greece.
Oh, yeah.
But before that, we have Richard Knight Jr. giving us his review of the September issue, all about Vanity Fair magazine and Anna Wintour. Not Vanity Fair, Vogue magazine and Anna Wintour. And also, we've got a He Said, She Said perspective from the bi perspective with By the Way with Sin and Jack. So then we'll be back with Mitchell, and we're going to go to Greece for a little bit.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm a Miller Lite Brewmaster.
Yeah, and I'm a Miller Lite Drinkmaster.
It's the Brewmaster Drinkmaster Show.
I just created a revolutionary aluminum pint bottle. Great new way to enjoy the taste of Miller Lite.
Wow. See, I just designed a new game day delicacy to be enjoyed with your great tasting beer, the 8-layer dip.
Well, the aluminum pint has a wider mouth, giving every sip a superior flow that delivers the great taste.
That's terrific. Most people flow from beef to bean to sour cream to cheese to guacamole to salsa to veggies. See, I'm not most people, though. I flow all the way to jambalaya.
Huh. Also, it's got a resealable cap that makes sure every sip tastes as fresh as the first.
Well, my dip is so hearty, it can last from a day game to a night game.
This isn't a competition, you know.
Okay, fine. You advance the science of drinking great-tasting beer, and I advance the art of enjoying it.
Introducing the new aluminum pint bottle from Miller Lite. Just another way for you to enjoy the great taste. Miller Lite. Great taste, less filling. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Live responsibly.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is The Week in News. United States Representative Gerald Nadler of New York is expected to introduce legislation on September 15th that will repeal the Defense of Marriage Act. Nadler has said that the bill would totally repeal DOMA, including Section 2, which urges states to disregard same-sex marriages performed in other states, as well as Section 3, which stops the federal government from recognizing gay and lesbian marriages.
At the U.S. Open tennis tournament, a man was arrested after he ran onto the court at Arthur Ashe Stadium to kiss Spanish player Rafael Nadal after the athlete's win over Frenchman Gael Monfils September 8th. The fan was arrested for interfering with a sporting event and will be charged with trespassing. Nadal said, "For me, it wasn't a problem. The guy was really nice. He said, 'I love you,' and he kissed me."
James Reed, a gay man, has alleged that park officers harassed him and a male friend at the Iwo Jima Memorial in Arlington, Virginia. Reed said that he and his friend were talking on a bench for approximately 45 minutes and were apprehended by the officers, allegedly because they left the park 7 minutes after the closing time of midnight. One officer said that police were patrolling the park because of complaints that men were committing lewd acts there.
Lambda Legal has urged the U.S. government to end a ban on foreign HIV-positive individuals from traveling to the country or living in it. The ban was enforced in 1987, and in 2008, President Bush signed the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief Act, which allowed positive individuals to enter the U.S. However, seropositive people still cannot enter until the Department of Health and Human Services figures out what to do next.
Former Miami TV anchorman Charles Perez, who was fired from his station recently after he filed a discrimination complaint against it, will marry boyfriend Keith Reinhardt on September 27th in Connecticut. Perez contends he was let go after his private life became public following allegations of domestic abuse against an ex-partner.
Army Archer, a celebrity reporter who announced in 1985 that Rock Hudson had AIDS, died September 8th at the age of 87. Archer was also known for his job as official greeter each year outside the Academy Awards. He wrote for Daily Variety and penned more than 10,000 columns.
In world news, in England, Prime Minister Gordon Brown has apologized to the late codebreaker Alan Turing, who was forced to undergo chemical castration for being in a gay relationship. Turing, who was a mathematical genius, deciphered German Enigma codes in World War II and helped turn things in the Allies' favor. However, Turing had to choose between castration and prison after his relationship was revealed. He committed suicide 2 years later in 1954. More than 30,000 people signed an online petition urging the government to apologize.
Tests have reportedly shown that South African track star Caster Semenye, whose gender was questioned after a dominating performance at the recent International Association of Athletics Federation Championships in Berlin, was born without ovaries or a uterus. The tests supposedly reveal that Semenye, 18, has internal male testes that are producing large amounts of testosterone. The federation may disqualify Semenye, and she may have to undergo surgery.
In Turkey, Yahya Yildiz, 49, has gone on trial for murdering his son, 26-year-old Ahmet, after he revealed he was in a relationship with a man from Cologne, Germany. Ahmet, who was about to become a physics instructor, came out to his family, but they were reportedly unhappy with the announcement.
In Montreal, local authorities have concluded that a fire at the Stereo nightclub in the gay village was deliberately started. The arson squad found accelerants at the scene and marks the second time in about a year that the club has been a target. No one has been charged so far. Thomas Piscardelli, Stereo's owner, said, "I'm not even angry. Something bad happened here, but something good's going to come out of it."
In entertainment news, Ellen DeGeneres will take Paula Abdul's place as the fourth judge on American Idol. DeGeneres will start after the audition round, which features celebrity guest judges such as singers Mary J. Blige and Victoria Beckham. DeGeneres said, "I'm going to have a day job and a night job. This is so exciting for me."
Gay gossip blogger Perez Hilton is involved in yet another feud, this time with actress Demi Moore. On his Twitter site, Hilton said that Moore is a bad mother for dressing 15-year-old daughter Tallulah Willis in skimpy outfits. Moore has fought back, tweeting that Hilton is a child pornographer, asking, "Let me ask all of you, what is it called when someone is telling people to look and focus on a child's while providing photos?"
Jodie Foster may be single again. Foster's girlfriend, Cynthia Mort, has reportedly left Foster to take up with former partner Amanda Demme. And to show just how linked Hollywood can be, Demme is the niece through marriage of Jonathan Demme, who directed Foster in Silence of the Lambs. And that's the Week in News, brought to you by Windy City Times.
Want to take your tennis game to the next level? Midtown Tennis Club wants to send you back to school for its patented instruction program, Tennis Schools. Whether you're a beginner or advanced intermediate, Tennis Schools has a program to fit your game. Enrollment in tennis school starts at only $105 and includes a four-week membership to the Midtown Tennis Club, including access to Midtown's fitness center, practice lanes, and locker rooms, as well as invitations to two tennis parties and instructions from the country's best pros, all starting at $105. That's less than $30 per lesson. Midtown Tennis Club is located in Lincoln Park at 2020 West Fullerton Avenue. For more information, call 773-235-2300 or visit midtown.com/Chicago and just click on the tennis schools link. Who said school can't be fun?
Hey, I'm Sin.
And I'm Jack.
And we're putting the B in the big gay alphabet with a he said, she said conversation about today's question.
Now, why are women easier or harder to date as a bisexual?
Well, I think for the same reasons that dudes are easy, chicks are hard. It's like, I look femme. So they always stare at me, even though they've seen me at the bar a million times, they always stare at me like, what are you doing here? Are you lost, little straight girl? You know what
are
I mean?
Are you tag along?
Like, yeah, like I'm the tag along or like the quintessential straight girl with all the gays or something. So even though, yeah, whatever. So I have that going against me. There seems to be a lacking in the femme culture these days. But then also too, once I do meet them, they find out I'm bi, and then I don't know. It's like they don't trust it.
They think it's a phase.
Yeah, they feel suspicious of it. I think a lot of them are intimidated too because they don't have a dick, you know. And then they think, oh well, she likes dick, and I don't have. And I'm like, hello, strap-ons, double-headed even. Let's have some fun here.
Now, would you say these are femme or more butch women who are giving you the grief and attitude?
Well, I'm usually attracted to more butch women, and the femme girls like me.
Cool.
So, but I don't know. I've met a few of them lately, really, when I've been drunk. So we haven't necessarily gotten as far as the bi part, but the butch girls usually, yeah. I don't know if it's almost like they have their own machismo kind of a thing about it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not one of the, you know, everybody's been burnt by a straight girl who thought she was bi or who thought she was gay and left.
Or gay until graduation.
Yeah. And then everybody's been burned by a straight girl. So I think that they're all just being protective of themselves, I guess.
On that note, I think straight women are the most difficult species ever. I mean, it's amazing that the human population continues.
I don't even know where you're going with this.
Like, straight women just like bog me out. I'm attracted mostly to bi women and lesbians.
Okay. Well, we're hotter.
Yeah. So, and you know what's going on? I mean,
right. Well, we get the queer thing too.
Yeah, exactly.
So, does that lead me to think that you have trouble with the ladies?
Yeah. Ladies give me gray hair and grief. But, you know, it's like when I do things with my gay friends, you know, people like see me as gay.
Right.
But when I do things with my straight friends, you know, I'm more kind of blend in, but, you know, I'm always suspicious. Do people think I'm like an outsider or someone kind of looking in? But,
do you set off straight people's gaydar?
To an extent.
Mm-hmm.
But I've done things and I'd be like, yeah, I'm queer or whatever, fluid. And people are like, really? And I'm like, whatever.
Right. So but, how do the chicks take that?
I try to avoid dating straight women as much as possible. It's like mostly bi women I'm attracted to.
Okay.
Or would pursue.
So have you dated a bunch of bi girls?
A handful, yeah.
Nice.
And they're cool. I mean, you know, we relate to the whole bi thing and they're easier to talk to and they understand the levels of attraction.
Totally. Well, I was thinking too, like, I feel like a bi guy and a bi girl together can like take over the world.
That's right. Because
it's like you can go in and out of straight and in queer stuff and just and you understand and you get it all. Like,
exactly.
I mean, it just seems like it would solve all of the difficulties around being bi.
Yeah.
Yes. Then, like, did you find that?
Yeah, totally. Like 2012, watch out.
Let's go, bis. Come on out.
So that's, by the way, this week.
I'm Sin.
And I'm Jack. And we'll be back with more B here on Windy City Queercast.
I'm here with a cast member of Mel Brooks' brand new Broadway musical, Young Frankenstein.
Nah.
Well, first of all, may I just say that you look fabulous. Mel Brooks' last show, The Producers, was a smash hit on Broadway and won a record 12 Tony Awards.
Mm-hmm.
This must be a huge break for you.
Nah.
Can you give us just a little taste of the show?
Bunnery!
Lovely. Now, is it true you make fierce love to Dr. Frankenstein's fiancée, Elizabeth? I see. So tell me, sir, what do you do to prepare for a show? Any special routines? Do you stretch and warm up? Get in touch with your character? Maybe relax, meditate, light a few candles? Skip the candles.
The classic Mel Brooks movie is alive and headed to the Cadillac Palace Theater. Young Frankenstein, November 3rd through December 13th. For tickets, call 800-775-2000 or visit BroadwayInChicago.com.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Weird.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of September 14th, 2009, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
Up at Next Theater, it's the end of the world. Do you have a date? Bay Area playwright Peter Notstrieb's comedy Boom is on through October 11th. Variety loved the show that's full of sex, planet-ruining cataclysm, and loads of booze. And they said, we're ready for whatever strange places Boom wants to take us. Get tickets for Boom at nexttheater.org.
Poseidon, an upside-down musical, will float your boat, says the Chicago Tribune. See the Jeff-recommended hit musical parody of the cult classic disaster film, now held over at the Chopin Theater. For tickets and information, go to handbagproductions.org.
Do you remember the songs Just a Bill, Conjunction Junction, or Interplanet Janet? Well, the Chicago-created Schoolhouse Rock Live is back. Relive those memories and sing along with the cast while drinking a beer at Mary's Attic in Andersonville, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights at 8 o'clock, now through October 3rd. Get your tickets at the door for only $10. Schoolhouse Rock Live. Don't miss it.
American Theater Company presents Yeast Nation, The Triumph of Life, a new musical from the Tony Award-winning creators of Urinetown. In the year 3,458,000 BC, a colony of salt-eating yeasts start an evolutionary chain reaction that changes existence forever. Starring Barbara Robertson, Yeast Nation, The Triumph of Life is playing now. Get tickets at atcweb.org.
Million Dollar Quartet is a hit, raves the Chicago Tribune. On December 4th, 1956, Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis, Carl Perkins, and Elvis Presley played together for the first and only time. Relive that night with the new rock and roll musical, now extended at the Apollo Theater. Don't miss this show. For tickets to Million Dollar Quartet, visit Ticketmaster.com.
Hailed by the New York Times as one of the greatest dancers in history, ballet legend Mikhail Baryshnikov will perform the Chicago premiere of Three Solos and a Duet with dance partner and collaborator Anna Laguna, September 25th through the 27th at the Harris Theater Chicago. For tickets and more, visit harristheaterchicago.org. Don't miss Baryshnikov in the dance event of the fall season. And for more Culture Club, visit windycitytimes.com.
Hi, this is Christopher Lee Nutter, the author of The Way Out, and you are listening to the Windy City Queercast, which does not suck.
Let's go to the movies anyway and see.
I'm Richard Knight Jr. with another Night at the Movies Minute. What do you suppose was the impetus for Vogue editor Anna Wintour to agree to an insider documentary about the magazine and ostensibly herself? Did the parade of merciless Dragon Lady knockoffs of her by an increasing list of actresses topped by Meryl Streep and The Devil Wears Prada finally get to her? Did she want the opportunity to outdo her imitators? One can only guess at Wintour's motives for the Anna Wintour, quote-unquote, revealed in the September issue of R.J. Cutler's documentary isn't much different than the silent, regal Anna Wintour that sits season in, season out in her trademark page boy and Jackie Kennedy-sized sunglasses at the couture shows, rarely cracking a smile and carefully observed, offering her observations to members of the fashion media. The movie, which details the staff putting together Vogue's latest, largest yearly issue, this one, the September 2007 one, confirms that Meryl Streep's galvanizing fictional portrayal has eclipsed interest in the real woman. So, with this powerful but boring subject as the centerpiece of his movie, Cutler must have thought, thank God for Grace Coddington, after encountering Vogue's creative director, who starred at the magazine the same day as Anna. This grand dame of fashion gliding around the narrow halls through the rows of designer dresses and accessories muttering witty retorts under her breath in her precise British accent, and rolling with the punches as her impossibly and beautifully styled shoots are cut from an issue, is the secret weapon the movie needs. The portrait of Coddington, who began as a model herself during the mod 60s, and her travails with the magazine, Read, Anna, is so pervasive that quickly she becomes the reason for the movie. Wintour, the easily parodied face of Vogue, has certainly been essential to the magazine's continuing success. But, as the September issue reveals, without the creative Coddington toiling away in the background, Anna's reign has meant nothing. And that's something we're seeing. I'm Richard Knight Jr., and that's your Night at the Movies Minute.
Hi there, this is Deb Pierce reminding you it's okay. Go ahead. You're not alone. Post a comment.
As I lay me down, heaven hear me now. I'm lost without a cause, after giving it my all. Winter storms have come and darkened my sun. After all that I've been through, who on earth can I turn to? I look to you. I look to you. After all my strength is gone, in you I can be strong. I look to you.
So, Mitchell, I am still a bit in jet lag, which is crazy.
How long exactly were you there?
I was there almost 2 weeks.
That's a great amount of time.
Yeah, it was really, really phenomenal. And it
was
a life-changing experience, I have
to
tell
you. I'm so glad. I'm so glad because I feel like we talked about this before you left.
Mm-hmm.
You know that I sort of was glad to be a slight inspiration about it, because when you said to me, I'm thinking about going to Greece, and I, without hesitation, was like, go, because I had just been.
Mm-hmm.
Loved it so much.
Mm-hmm.
Found it so beautiful.
Yeah.
Now tell me what islands or what parts of Greece you went to.
Well, the interesting thing was that I was invited by kind of a professional friend to who I know, she goes every year because her mom and dad grew up on this small island between Crete and Rhodes, called Karpathos. And so I was invited to go to Karpathos and stay in her family's coach house, which she told me was going to be empty while she and her husband were there for their annual trip. And so, you know, it's one of those opportunities to experience an island with people who know the island and live there. And I went with a friend because Kelly's obviously still in Kalamazoo, Michigan, doing her work. And, you know, it was just amazing. The plan and what we did was to spend a few days in Athens, because it's a great city that I've always wanted to see and always wanted to experience.
It's wild, yeah.
And then to go to Karpathos for about 6 days and just be on the beach, you know, just literally kind of live like we live there.
Oh.
And then to spend the last 2 days to fly over to Rhodes, the island of Rhodes, which is a far more touristy island.
It's very close
to Turkey. You can see Turkey from the shoreline, and it's known for being kind of a medieval city. There is a walled part of Old Town Rhodes, which is a walled in medieval city. So we thought that would just be very unique and different to go to. So we flew out and arrived there late on a Thursday night and to Athens and went to sleep, and, you know, kind of because I've never had jet lag, I've never done the whole being in Europe thing. You know, we were just going to hang out by the pool and kind of rest the first day, which we did. But by 3 o'clock or 2 o'clock, you know, we decided that maybe we just go kind of knock about. And, you know, when you're in a city like Athens and you go, well, I'm just going to go wander around, I didn't really realize how small a city it is, really, and that it's extremely walkable. And so we were walking past the National Gardens, and they were so beautiful, and walking through there, and we see a little, we see the Parliament, which was on my list to do, because they have the famous changing of the guards, where they still do this thing every hour on the hour, where the guards change in from the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. And, you know, the guys are wearing the skirts and the pom-poms on the shoes, and they kick their legs up, and it's all very quirky.
I don't think they call them pom-poms, but yes.
Yes. It's like what you get on your skates when you were in, you know, junior high.
Well, you did.
And so we saw the changing the guard. We just happened to be there like 5 minutes before the change. So that was perfect timing. And then we were walking through the rest of the gardens, and I see this sign that says, you know, the Temple of Olympian Zeus. And I'm like, well, that sounds like it's something. And I think that's something that I read I wanted to go see. And you kind of come to this clearing, and it's just, you know, this expanse of this, the remnants of this old temple in this enormous space that's like the size of an NFL football field. And you just stumble upon it in the middle of downtown, you know, so bizarre. I mean, just really, I had such an emotional response just even that first afternoon.
And, wow, it's amazing to kick it off that way.
Oh my gosh. And then we like walked into the Placa, which is a very neighborhood area where there's lots of little shops. And a friend of mine, Tom Michael, who's a famous cabaret singer in town, had told me through a friend of his about a restaurant in the Placa. If you happen to be in the Placa, go here. So we found Milton's, and we sat down, and, you know, we were at this very cool modern Greek restaurant outdoors on sidewalk, and there's misters, there's a fan with misters, and we're having this wonderful, beautiful food, and I'm not having a cocktail. I'm actually having a Coca-Cola in a glass bottle, which I love.
And you notice that they don't use high fructose corn syrup, so it tastes better.
Oh my God. It was so good. I had like a Coke. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, oh my gosh, Vicky, this is like, I am just as happy as I've ever been in my entire life.
Love that, Amy.
And I was just sitting there, and I was like, you know, let's go back to the hotel. Let's go and plan this day, because the next day was the Acropolis and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, let's get our bill and leave. And I open up my purse, and my heart dropped to my feet. Because I had been pickpocketed, and I had lost my wallet with my money, my driver's license, my MasterCard, and my passport.
Amy, no.
In the first afternoon on my first trip to Europe. So I like have this white hot fear go through my body, and I'm like, oh my God, my wallet's not in my bag. And Vicky's like, what do you mean your wallet's not in your bag? And I said, my wallet is not in my bag. Somebody took my wallet. And she's like, are you sure? And I'm like, yes. And in my head, I'm going, this can't possibly be happening. And then my head's also going, no, it's really not there, you know? And thus began just this adventure in at least Athens of... you know, I have to say, like, many years ago, this would have been a very different experience for me. But, you know, I was just really, I mean, I'm not saying I wasn't freaked out. I was really freaked out. I had a good cry. And I felt all this shame. I felt all this shame of like, well, I'm just the dumb American, or I'm the stupid first time European traveler, or, you know, my mom warned me of this or whatever. And then I just had to get over that. You know, I went to the hotel. I knew I needed to just do some things. I needed to cancel my credit card. I needed to, you know, go to the hotel and say, has this ever happened to somebody? What do you do? And I did. And they were like, you need to go file a police report. We'll find the closest police station to the area in which you think it was stolen. And then we'll try to call the U.S. Embassy. So we call the U.S. Embassy. And, of course, it's 6:30 on Friday, so they're closed until Monday, which was the day we were leaving for Karpathos. So, and then, you know, the embassy said, look, you know, you'll just go there Monday morning. They open at 8:30. And the crazy thing was when we asked the hotel where the embassy was, it was a 4-minute walk from my hotel.
Wow, that's good.
Which was brilliant. And
right.
You know, the funny thing is, Mitchell, is that after this thing happened, everything after it was just as simple and as just like as long as you just do the next thing, everything fell into place. I mean, there's such a happy ending to this story.
Oh, thank goodness. I'm getting nervous here. See, what people don't know is that we haven't actually talked about it.
No,
we
I haven't told you this at all. I know. So we walk across Athens that night to go to back to the police department, which literally, you speak of Facebook, it's hilarious. I walk into the fourth floor of the Athens police department. First of all, the Athens police are all gorgeous. I want to make a calendar for gay men and straight women of the Athens police force because
the
they're tall, dark,
general,
and handsome. Yeah, they're fucking gorgeous.
I mean, just beautiful people.
Yeah. And so I go to the fourth floor, which you have to walk up, and I go into what almost feels like an elementary school classroom. And there's like three cops in there, and one of them's on Facebook. Like I can tell when I walk in, he's on Facebook.
Funny.
And, you know, I mean, the funny thing was I had an international driver's license, which I'd gone to AAA and gotten before I left. So it was the only ID I had. And I had a copy of my passport, but I didn't have my passport. So got him my police report, went home, went to the bar, had really expensive cocktails and fell asleep. And then the next morning I woke up in an absolute panic and really just so grateful for my friend who was with me because, you know, we really just talked it through and she was like, look, nobody's hurt. Nobody's dead.
Right.
And, you know, I just dug deep. I just got real prayerful about it and real quiet. In my quiet on the insides, I don't mean quiet. I really was able to talk it out with her, but I was like, you know, I have wanted to be here and this can't be an accident. And I really believe, you know, that there's a plan, you know,
and also, I mean, you are having a unique experience. I mean, to go to Greece and get to meet the police and then go to the embassy and, you know,
exactly.
You're having a unique experience.
Having a very unique experience. And so I just decided, you know, I don't know that I want to go to the Acropolis today. Can we do some other things? Because I really am not, it's going to take me a little bit to get mentally like all together here. But so we did some smaller museums and some other things that day. We went to the Ancient Agora, which is fantastic, which is also a big area of ruins, which has a fantastic temple. I think it's the Temple of Hephaestus that's up on this mountaintop. And I just started feeling better and better as the day went along and just really enjoying the city and eating good food and speaking to people. And I was like, well, I don't have anything else for them to steal. So I didn't feel paranoid.
Right. Right. You can't take anything more from me.
Yeah. And, you know, then the next day we did some more stuff and we ended up doing the Acropolis at the end of the day. And I have to say it was such a magical thing. We went to there's the new Acropolis Museum, which is extraordinary. It's built on top of some of the old ruins in the old city. So you can actually, there's glass flooring outside the museum as you approach it and inside the museum where you can see all the excavation that they're still continuing to do on.
I've seen it. It's amazing.
Just genius. And then we went to the Acropolis and I have to say at the bottom of the hill is the Theater of Dionysus. And I don't know why I didn't think that I was going to get to see that. It's so strange that I didn't really until I was standing there put two and two together that, you know, it's really the birthplace of theater. It's where Sophocles and Aristophanes and Euripides, plays.
Stepped out of the chorus.
Yeah. And I just started crying. I mean, I literally, you know, I just turned that corner and just tears started streaming down my face. So, you know, and you got to walk up into the seating area of the Theater of Dionysus. And then we walked the hill to the Acropolis and it was about 6 o'clock at night and it was still sunshiny, but it was cool and breezy. And what was amazing by doing it at the end of our trip was I was able to look down and see the Temple of Olympian Zeus we had seen the first day and see Parliament.
Lovely.
And, you know, even see like that's the area where the police department is. And,
right, right.
And see the ancient agora and know where everything was because I had walked it for 2 days. And it was just really so magical. And, you know, the end of the Athens crisis, you know, I think it's either the Japanese or the Chinese two symbols for the word crisis are the symbol for violent and the symbol for opportunity.
Huh.
And it really was like this, you know, thing that started off being a thing of violence or felt, you know, felt like a an invasion. You know, somebody had taken something from me. I mean, obviously, I didn't get hurt or mugged, and I'm grateful for that. But it really became this great kind of spiritual opportunity for me to just, you know, let it go and enjoy where I was. And so on Monday morning, we were supposed to leave for the island of Karpathos at 1 o'clock. We needed to leave the hotel at 11:30. And so I arrived at the U.S. Embassy at 8 o'clock, and there were already 10 other Americans in line also who had had their passport stolen.
Wow.
And I didn't feel so bad because, you know, like one guy was a man who was a military contractor in Afghanistan, and he had just traveled into Greece for a while and was going to Vienna for a little while, and he had had his visa, work visa, and his passport and his driver's license, everything stolen.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, families and, I mean, just like all different kinds of people. So I did not feel, didn't feel shame anymore.
Right,
I just felt
right.
like
were,
I'm a human being.
Tourist.
Yeah, just, I'm just a human being. Yeah. And I turned the corner to the last window because you're going through these different stages. And the last window was literally the most gorgeous woman. She was so pretty. Elaine, who I'm definitely writing a thank you note to this week, who looked like Juliana Margulies, was American, Greek American, and she couldn't have been sweeter. And you can kind of tell they're sussing you out to see if you're really an American. She's like, oh, so you're born in Tennessee. So what's the capital of Tennessee again? Nashville. Oh yeah, that's right. And that state, I always love to remember what's the motto of that state, or what's kind of the saying for that state? And I was like, we're the volunteer state. And she was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And she's like, now you live in Chicago? And I was like, yeah. And she's like, she's like, and who's your mayor again? Mayor Daley. It's just so funny, you know, like
yeah.
they're
just
talking
making sure
to
you knew
you
your
and,
stuff.
Yeah, but they're being, she was being so sweet, you know, because it's such a stressful situation. They gave me a temporary passport. I ran my 4 or 5 minute, you know, run back to the hotel, walked in the door at 11:05. We were in a cab
wow.
at 11:15 and,
wow.
And on to Karpathos. And that part of my trip became just a great story, you know?
How did you solve the, like, credit card crisis? How did you have any cash on you? Did you have
well
card?
I actually had all my American dollars. I had put them in the safe, but I for some reason I was carrying a wallet that Kelly had given me that held a passport, which I've never carried my passport with my wallet, and I will never ever carry it with my wallet again. But I forgot that it was really even in there when I was clearing out some of my money. So I did have I lost about $400.
Oh.
And I had a some other euro and some American, you know, and some American dollars that were in the safe. So, and I had a friend who let me, you know, use her MasterCard some. So I owe her a bit of a check.
Well, thank God you weren't alone.
No, thank God I wasn't alone. Well, I would have had to have money wired. I did not tell Kelly and I did not tell my family that any of this happened. The only person who knew was my dog walker, who scanned my birth certificate and emailed it to me, and then my travel agency, because in case we didn't get my passport, we couldn't have gone the first leg of the island flights. But the island of Karpathos is amazing. Woke up every day, walked downtown, had, you know, great breakfasty foods and sat on the water.
How long were you on the island?
How many people?
How long were you on the island?
6 days.
How perfect.
Yeah. And it's about 20,000 people. When it's in high season, 6,000 people who actually live there.
Wow.
With all these little villages, very mountainous, the most gorgeous beaches you can ever imagine. Each beach has like 1 to 2 little tavernas on it, and you can spend €6 and get 2 lawn chairs and an umbrella, and they're nice chairs. And we went to pebble beaches where they were all rocks, and we went to sandy beaches, and but every one of them had that same, just absolutely, I couldn't even believe it was real, gorgeous water.
No,
I have never seen it.
Insane.
It's just insane.
So
and I
beautiful.
Feel like I've been to some beautiful Caribbean places, you know, with the Turks and Caicos and St.
John. Yeah, but
John.
The Mediterranean is different.
Oh, my God. It is so different.
It's different. It's like a beautiful bathtub.
It's like filled with tile or something. It's just gorgeous.
I know. I'm a big fan myself.
And we just, you know, there we just walked into town each night and kind of got to know the guys, kind of trying to encourage you to come into their taverna to eat dinner. And, you know, they'd always be kind of standing out in the middle of the street. And, you know, went to the beach all day long with my friend and her husband and their little 4-year-old boy and played in the water. And
It sounds so idyllic.
It was just magnificent. Now, coming back, I cannot sleep on an airplane. Even drugged, I couldn't sleep. So the jet lag has been intense. And I had a very hard week last week. And then I had a trip that I had to go out to Indiana. And so I have had very little sleep. So that's why it's taken me so long to talk about this trip.
Yeah, you need to take a serious nap day.
Yeah, I'm going to have to take a nap day. Maybe tomorrow.
Well, it's coming up to your birthday, too.
It is coming up to my birthday.
And I'm going to be home for that.
I'm going to be 25.
Oh, me too.
You too.
Liars.
Liars. So,
well, I'm glad it all worked out, and I'm glad that you had a magical time there, because I did as well. And I had this feeling when you mentioned it to me that it just was like, yes, 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 you must go. Mm-hmm. Don't hesitate. Just do it.
Mm-hmm. It's totally true. And, you know, and if worst case scenario is that all your crap gets stolen, what I know is as long as you're near a U.S. embassy, you're going to be okay. You know,
you just got to take it in stride. It's funny. I mean, I did not have that experience, but, you know, I mean, I'm very paranoid. I never forget my keys. Mm-hmm. I never leave things behind. I used to be that person, but I'm very, very, very critical of myself. So I'm very hyper conscious. Well, yesterday I was at an ATM in Louisville, and I answered a phone call while I was doing the ATM transaction at night after the show. And I walked back to the apartment, which is about 15 minutes away, and about 10 minutes of the walk, I realized I hadn't grabbed my card.
Oh.
And so I literally ran back after doing this incredibly difficult physical show in my Crocs, and I ran back, and it was not there.
Oh, no.
And so I just sort of, you know, prayed that pray to the universe that it was sucked into the machine and not stolen. So I called the bank first thing in the morning, and they're like, well, yes, we have your card, but our policy is that we shred any card that's not our bank's card. And I was like, oh, please, 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 please don't do that, because I'm not home. I have no other access to my cash. I don't have my checkbook with me. So please, please, please. And they're like, well, it's our policy. And I was like, is there any way around this policy? And people are so friggin' nice here.
Mm-hmm.
Bank guy said, all right, come into the bank this afternoon. We'll call your bank. And if they ask you security questions that you can answer, I'll give you your card back. So he totally, like, changed his policy for me, because I was just like, please, I'm really, I will cooperate in any way if we can somehow work out a compromise. So it was a lesson for me, too, to just take a deep breath.
Yep.
Start at square one.
Yep.
It's actually sort of what our show is about, Looking Glass Alice. It's one square at a time.
Yep.
And get through it, because there's a way out of it. No one's going to jail. No one's dying. It's not a tragedy. Just take a deep breath. Be kind to the people who are there to help you.
Yep.
And it will work out.
It really does.
Good lesson, right?
It may not work out exactly how you want it to, you know. Like,
no,
I was
not.
Even like, you know what? I will be okay if they tell me we can't go. I have to change my flight and we can't leave till Tuesday. I was like, I will understand that there is a reason for this. I don't know what it is.
But there's a reason.
But there's a reason for it, you know. And obviously, and also what I'm really glad for is just the maturity or the sanity of mind that I feel like I have more now in my life as I've aged, is that... Yeah. I didn't like the fear and the not knowing and the shame or all that kind of stuff ruin my 2 days in Athens.
My first feeling when I realized that I'd lost my card, that it was gone, was the shame of, like, how irresponsible can you be, mister? Mm-hmm. You're in your 40s. What kind of stupid behavior is that? And I thought, you know what, Fane, give yourself a break.
Yeah, you're human.
And luckily, my friend, like I said, my friend Megan was here, and she's an extraordinary young woman and a very calming force. And she was like, okay, well, nothing you can do about it now. Call in the morning. You'll report it that you lost it, or you'll call the bank. And if they have it, if they don't have it, you'll report it stolen or lost. And we'll just take it one step at a time. And it's just a great life lesson.
Yep, it truly is. So that's my Grease story. I did not sing Mamma Mia. I did get to tell lots of straight men about the Kinsey scale, and perhaps in one of the upcoming shows, I will share some of that.
Oh my God, that's brilliant, Amy! That's a whole podcast.
It was a whole podcast, because it became kind of the run of the joke in Carpathos of, like, you know what? That's a little five, you know, or like definitely a two. Like, you know, it was these two guys were quite hilarious, and I think I I'll have to see if I can play a little bit of my friend Sotiri, and his fascination and Brett with the Kinsey scale. It was quite funny.
Brilliant.
But Mitchell, maybe you'll come back the next time. Our next show, we're going to have Levi Kreiss of Million Dollar Quartet. I recorded this interview last week, and there's some big news that just happened. So we're going to actually have kind of some breaking news with that next show later on this week. So
awesome.
We hope that you will.
That's an exciting show, Million Dollar Quartet.
Yeah, it's so great. So hopefully, everybody, you'll download the next show. But Mitchell, it's been great to catch up with you.
I miss you.
I miss you too. I'm going to see you in like 1 week.
Yes, in 1 week, and then we're going to have a fabulous birthday dinner.
Woohoo!
And I get to actually see Steven Rader in person.
You will actually get to see Steven Rader in person. It's totally true. Have a great day, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This program is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast. Queer and now.